All right, I think we're live. All right, well, welcome. It's Thursday, October 2nd. We're here in the Veterans Hall. This is the October meeting for the Harbor Advisory Board. That will go ahead and get started. We'll establish a quorum, call to order, do a quick roll call. Start on my left. Member Dow?
Here.
Ryan?
Here.
Member Green?
Here.
Member Hanson?
Here.
Witowski?
Here.
Myers, present. We're at a quorum. With that, we'll jump over to the Pledge of Allegiance.
Start down that way.
Start down this way? Okay. We'll start on my right this time for a board member announcements. Member Witowski?
I've got two events I'd like to announce. There's the Maritime Family Fun Day on October 11th, and then also the Witch's Paddle on October 20th.
Okay, and getting ready for the new season of fall and possible Christmas fun stuff that's going to happen. I'm happy to say that the Friends of Morro Bay Harbor have received word that they can do a free movie night for everybody to come down between Rose's Landing and the Libertine. There will be a projector and a screen with a Christmas movie that we haven't decided upon yet. But it should be a really fun, free event for everybody to come down and get their Christmas holiday spirit going. And then the next day after that, so that's December 11th, Thursday, 5:30 to 7:30. And then the Friday after that is going to be a holiday-themed shop sip and stroll done by the Chamber. And so that's going to be on the Embarcadero as well as in downtown Morro Bay or uptown. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Member Hanson. Member Green?
No announcements.
All right, thank you. I'll go ahead, Member O'Brien.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to expand on the Family Fun Day, if I could, for a minute. The Family Fun Day is basically geared towards children. There's going to be free lunch for them, drinks, sodas, and a bunch of different events happening and so forth. But it's also an opportunity to visit the Maritime Museum. And it's a little gem hidden down on the waterfront there. And I think for those people who are listening that haven't been there, please come down to visit. Everything's free. Feel free to make a donation, as a matter of fact. Shameless, is it? So, and anyways, please drop down the museum, check us out. There's been a lot of a few bluefin tuna caught out here in the last couple of weeks that were decent sized. The biggest that I heard of was about 120 pounds. And so there is a few around for those who want to go get them. And the halibut are biting really well. Guys have been very, very good on the halibut. As a matter of fact, the market's even getting a little soft. So if you want to go out and catch a nice meal, trying for halibut right now would be a good effort. And then the long fin is a sailboat out of Morro Bay here that fishes for albacore up in Oregon and Washington. He just returned home, and he is selling fish off the boat. He only had a couple of tons, so it probably won't last long, but he is at the bottom of Beach Street. He's a sailboat, and he's the only sailboat in that little lineup of slips right at the bottom. Go down Beach Street, and don't make any turns. Go right across like you're driving into the bay, and you're there. Put the brakes on before you hit the bay.
All right. Anyways, thank you, Member O'Brien.
Thank you very much.
Member Dowdy?
Good evening. I noticed in the Bay News the other day that the fishermen had donated a considerable amount of money to fix up the fisherman's dock. And I just don't know whether most of the public understands just how hard it is to work on the docks there. Almost all of the docks are supported by pilings. And initially, these were all creosoted pilings, but were put installed probably back in the 50s and 60s. So they're all 50, 60 years old, and they're running out of their life. So I have some quick JPEG photos of some of the pilings under the wharfs there, if you can show those.
AGP, can you bring those up?
Oh, geez.
And that's typical of what happens right on the bottom there. They just rot away. Little bugs are chewing away on the top of the creosote. Creosote pilings are a tree that they strip off the bark, put it in a vat, pressurize it with coal tar, and embed the wooden piling with poison. And it lasts for quite a while until the little bugs start eating away at it. And once those get through there, then the teredo worms get in there, and they'll go right on through the piling, and before long, there's nothing left. As you can see, these pilings have no bottoms at all. So to fix up these docks, we can't drive a piling through a crane anymore with a crane, so we have to get underneath the docks and repair those. And what we do is, if the piling is still fairly good, we have to move all these rocks out of the way. And some of those rocks are a ton. So we've got to get a crane with a winch and drag these rocks out of underneath there. And we're talking about working underneath slippery, barnacle-covered rocks underwater a good half the time. There's only 3 or 4 feet of headroom. It's tough, tough work. There's not too many people who are willing to do this hard work. So if the piling's not too bad, we will wrap it with a heavy plastic. We'll have to dig down, move those rocks out of the way, dig down into the mud so we can get down where there's no oxygen. That piling stub under the mud is still pretty good. Well, then we'll wrap a good piling, or a fairly good piling, with this plastic, heavy plastic, and that more or less seals it up for another 20, 30 years. But if the piling is somewhat okay, maybe 50% or so, we will encase the, clean it all off, dig down below there so we have a good piling stub, then we will encase that piling with a fiberglass tube and then fill it full of epoxy. And that takes 2 or 3, 4 guys to work, and only you can work at certain tides, and we trim the epoxy out of it. If the piling is completely gone, like we see on this one photograph, we have to cut it off on the top, dig down below, cut it off at the bottom underneath the mud, drag in a new pile stub, secure it into place with steel straps on both sides, then encase it with the fiberglass, and then fill it full of epoxy. And this has to be done at low tide or during the summertime. The low tides are 2 or 3 in the morning. During the winter times, they're late in the afternoons. So it's really, really tough and really, really expensive to support the waterfront on the waterfront, the pilings and the buildings. That's my spiel. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Member O'Brien, you had a follow-up there.
Yeah. Sorry, I get a couple more things in. One of the things I wanted to mention was a thank you to Neil Farrell from the Estero Bay News for a wonderful, wonderful write-up, huge write-up he did on the commercial fishermen and some recent funds that the commercial fishermen have donated to the harbor. It's Estero Bay News. It came out last week. It'll be out for another week. And I encourage everybody to read it. It's a real nice article, and we thank him very much. Another thing that I'd like to mention is everybody knows, of course, the fishing industry has gone through some terrible downturns, and it was extraordinarily frustrating for the fishermen because we'd be up here saying, oh, it's things like bad management practices and so forth. But, you know, everybody's looking at me going, oh, he's a fisherman, he's a bunch of sour grapes, you know. Nobody's going to believe that crap. But the federal government has recognized it. And how they recognized it was we are no longer competitive in the world in the fishing industry. And There's no reason for it. We have the healthiest fish stocks in the world, right here. And in any case, the federal government sent us a notice that we have a couple of meetings with them, and they're interested in the regulations that govern activities that may be suspended, revised, or rescinded, and regulations that basically are stupid. And so anyways, we're looking forward to working with those powers, and maybe we can bring the fishing industry back to some normality. That's all.
All right, thank you, Member O'Brien. So I have a few things as the with my friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department hat on. One of the things that we've had success with here recently is collaborating with other events. The downside to that is a lot of times, by the time we get through this, a lot of my thunder is already stolen. But that's a good thing, the more people that know. We did, I think it was 2 weeks ago on the 20th in September, we did a big cleanup. The Harbor Department and the Friends of Morro Bay sort of sponsor the Bluff Talk Parks, south part of town, doing it for the last few years. We drug up about a little over a ton and a quarter, 2,700 pounds of debris and clippings of plants that were overgrown, a lot of cleanup stuff. There's, I think there must have been at least one or two Model T cars down there because we keep pulling up pieces of cast iron that look like car parts, so it's pretty interesting. That's been successful. Again, we mentioned the Maritime Museum. We'll have a booth there as well. We actually will have a photo booth there, complimentary as part of that, so pretty excited about that one. Member Hansen, we're going to help with the movie night in December. One thing we're actually looking at doing is another sort of cleanup day and partnering with the Bloom and Morro Bay sometime in early November. The harbor walk down along by the rock, there's just a lot of sand and upkeep that pretty excited about that. And I think that's it for mine. That we'll go ahead and move on to the presentation. And we've got a guest speaker here, Madeline Witowski, that's going to be talking about sea hares. So if you want to come up, Madeline, we have a slide that we'll be presenting.
I just have the one photo.
Yep. So if you see the little green light come on, Madeline, on the bottom, that means you're close enough.
Okay, perfect. Good late afternoon, Harbor Advisory Board, Harbor Director, and other members of the community. For my sixth grade science class, I'd recently completed a report on the sea hare. Since these animals live right here, I thought I'd share some highlights from what I learned. While they might not be as famous as otters or kelp, sea hares do play an important role in our coastal ecosystem. The sea hare is a herbivore, feeding mainly on algae, wrack, and seagrass. It uses a radula, a rough tongue covered in tiny teeth, to scrape plants, just like a land snail. By eating algae, sea hares help keep marine plants healthy and prevent algae overgrowth, which benefits the balance of our bay. Sea hares live in shallow, protected coastal areas where marine plants thrive. The California sea hare, Alypsia californica, is especially common in our region. They can also be found in places like the UK, Australia, the Philippines, and the Florida Keys, but Morro Bay's seagrass beds and rocky shores provide excellent habitat. Sea hares has made amazing adaptations. They've reproduced rapidly, laying up to 80 million eggs that can just hatch in 12 days. They use rhinophores, tube-like structures, to sense pheromones and find mates. They camouflage to blend into their surroundings, and when threatened, they release a cloud of purple ink. This ink confuses predators by mimicking food scents and even contains compounds that help protect the sea hare from infection. A few fun things that I learned are that sea hares can grow up to 4 pounds and 30 inches long. Despite their name, they are not sea bunnies. Those are tiny, colorful nudibranches. They only have one gill and can only tell light from dark. And while people in some places have cooked them, I think most of us would prefer to just admire them in our tide pools and eelgrass beds. So even though the sea hare may look unusual, It plays a big part in keeping our local marine environment healthy. Learning about them from my class project made me appreciate just how much diversity we have in our bay. Thanks.
Thank you, Madeline. I don't know if we have any questions for Madeline at all. All right. Again, thank you very much, Madeline. We appreciate that. I do have one question. Is that the picture? Is that you with the sea hair? Is that your hand? No. All right. All right. Well, thank you. With that, let's see. Next on the agenda. Oh, we'll open it up to a public comment. If there's anybody in the audience that has something that's not on the agenda or cannot stay, they're welcome to come up and speak now. Audience, AGP, is anybody have their hand up in the queue?
Hi, Chair Myers. There are no raised hands in the queue.
All right, thank you. With that, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Is there anything that anybody would like to pull?
Yeah, I'd like to pull the staff report, the status report.
Okay. Lori, can we just ask questions, or do we have to pull it? Pull it. Okay, we'll go ahead and pull it. I'm with you. I have a couple comments as well. Anybody else? So we'll just go ahead and ask. All right, go ahead, Member Green.
Yeah, I just was curious. I guess this would be for Chris, the Harbor Vitality Director, on the Shumash National Marine Sanctuary Advisory Council. It looks like you attended the introductory meeting. Could maybe just fill us in about what that looks like, or what that looked like, and what it might look like going forward?
Yeah, so it was very introductory. They just kind of went over the format. I'm going to be an alternate, so I won't be the direct representative, but Mayor Wixom is representing the cities, and I'm representing the ports and harbors, and then Lori French is also representing commercial fishing interests as well. And so I believe the first meetings might, we do have a tentative meeting in October, but I believe that's just for the members as well, and then we will have upcoming meetings going forward. But I will be sure to alert the HAB members that any upcoming meetings that we have.
That's great. And then is that a Brown Act board that the public can follow along with as well?
Yes, I believe so. The initial meeting's just for, I don't think it has to, for the organization meetings, I don't believe have to be Brown Act, but as far as the public meetings, those are all Brown Act.
Cool. Thank you.
I just had a general comment, specifically the revetment report. I know the two of you work on that. It was well written, and it was actually kind of a pleasure to read. It was a lot of interesting information. I mean, staff reports sometimes are just repetitive. You do so many rescues and whatnot, but this one was actually pretty cool to see some of the history and the pictures and the graphics. And Dana always pulls something out of her hat for us in that regard from a historian perspective. But yeah, it was just a comment, and thank you for putting that together. Any other questions on the staff report? That we'll just motion to accept it. Yeah. So with that, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Passes 6. Didn't get a second. Sorry, Lori. All right. With that, I think we'll move on. Let me just double check. First, this update is the revetment update. So with that, we'll Director Munson.
Thank you, Chair Myers and board members. I just had wanted to give an update of where we were at with the revetment, because when I first got here, we had the condition assessment report, and there were a lot of questions about how where we go from here, because the original estimates were pretty significant. I think it was up to $50 million to do repairs just on the public sections. And so when I first got here, she's no longer with the city, but the then city engineer, Cindy Cecil, had made a comment that when she was doing a tour with the Army Corps personnel, that one of them had mentioned that we should really spend some time to look in to see if the Army Corps actually did build the revetments, because, and we could prove it, because if we did, then usually the Army Corps doesn't back away from their responsibilities. And so I started a deep dive, started my my free trial of archive.org or something like that, where I just went through all of the old newspapers, any reference of Morro Bay and revetments. It was kind of neat, but anyway, I did find some references to it. I saw a lot about the amphibious base that was here, and a lot of things that implied that there was that they had built the revetment, but nothing definitive. And we finally came across an old plan from the 1940s, which did imply that they had built the revetments, but it didn't show any sort of direct indication that, you know, here's where the revetments are going and how far they would go. And one of our consultants, Rincon, they had they had some internal discussions about it, and somebody knew where they could find it. And so they found that the best way to find Army Corps documents is not to talk to the Army Corps directly, it's to talk to their contractors, because usually they have the trove of documents. And so in those discussions, they came across two documents. One was the actual plan from 1941, which definitively showed that the revetments were built. And then they also had another document from 1992, which said, and I've included the snippet there, it says the existing federal project, which includes the breakwaters, the channel, and 6,000 feet and change of revetment. And that meant to me that it was still their responsibility. If there was a transfer from the Army Corps to the city, we would have known about it. That would have been well documented. And so they were still claiming that it was their responsibility. With that, we went back to the Army Corps, and they conceded that it might be worth investigating more. Their concern was is that there's many areas along the revetment that are built up over the top of, and they don't really want the responsibility of that area because we allowed that to happen. And in order to repair the revetments in those areas, in some cases they would either have to remove the building or try and work around underneath buildings, in which case they don't want to be liable for it. And just recently, I got another trove of documents from Greg Qualick, our public works director. He had gotten it from a while ago from Dan Swanson. And in those, they were from the 80s, and it showed that this exact topic had come up before, and the Army Corps at the time did concede that it was their responsibility to maintain it, but they wanted to be released from the liability of those areas that had been built up over it. At the time, the public works director had gone to the city council to ask he had recommended that we do not let the Army Corps release the Army Corps from the liability of the areas that were built up, and it was just passed, no discussion at all. And so that's where we're kind of at right now, is we've never, the Army Corps still claims responsibility, but they don't want any responsibility for the areas that are built up on top of. And so what our game plan is right now, or what my game plan is to, we've got an initial estimate for just doing the repair plan of the public areas that was based off of that condition assessment report that was just released at the end of last year. That's gonna cost $3 to $4 million. I'm gonna try and get either Army Corps or a granting agency to fund that report. And then once we have that, we will also include some sea level rise adaptations, and then taking that back to the Army Corps and seeing if they'll cover the repairs with that. And if not, we still have options of grants, but we're trying to make some forward progress on this. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this staff report is just so in 10 years' time, somebody's not doing the exact same thing as me, that there's at least some breadcrumb trail that others can follow. So I'm happy to answer any questions if the board has any.
Sure.
I have one. Approximately what portion or proportion of the Army Corps trying to say not have liability for?
That's a good question. I haven't measured out exactly how much that is. I do know a lot of the public areas are not that developed on top of the, they might have a road on front of them, but there's not a building directly on top of them or like a pier structure on top of them. I think where it really gets complicated is when there's a building cantilevering over the top of the revetment where they just, there's not any ability to get in there. And it'd be nice if we could ask them, I doubt that they would go for this, but one of the thoughts I had was having them set aside an endowment so that eventually when we do get to those areas, we can then repair them, but you know, we can at least ask.
And then are we talking all the way out to the rock and all the way down to Thailand's and beyond, or are we just talking about Central Embarcadero?
The original revetments extend from around Coleman Beach, I want to say, all the way past the boat launch ramp.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, Chris, this is going forward. Is there any timeline thought about even at this stage of the process?
When we, in our initial talks with the Army Corps, they sort of prefaced it as, you know, we can look into this, but this is something that will take years, not months, multiple years. So it's something that they identify, they study, they come up with a plan, they do all the environmental, before they do the environmental, they get funding for it, and then they go through all the permitting. And so, I mean, this could be a decade out if the Army Corps was to be the sole person to come forward and help us with it. My hope is that we can address some of the more critical areas in the interim.
I was going to say how much of it is in need now as opposed to 10 years from now.
Right, and I think they've identified that in the assessment report, which areas are critical and which ones are poor right now. And there are some that are okay, are holding up fine, but there are definitely some areas that we need to focus on, and those might not be able to wait for 10 years.
Yeah, I guess along those same lines, you know, $3 million would fix some of the high priority stuff, but grants are grants, and they have to be used for what they're granted for, so. All right, I think that's it. Any other
one
questions?
One more. Oh, go ahead. Are you documenting all of the, I take it the history lesson that you've given yourself, you're documenting, and there's different steps that the Army Corps needs to take so that this progress isn't lost?
Yeah, so I do have some, I didn't want to give you a huge data dump of all of the stuff we have, but we are documenting the process, and hopefully it gets us somewhere. But I am aware that it's always important for me to leave clues to the next person because, it's really difficult when somebody moves on or whatnot, and then there's just all of that information is lost.
Anything else? Open it up to public comment. If there's anybody in the audience that'd like to speak, now's the time. Thank you.
Hello. I just wanted to say, I really appreciate what Director Munson is doing. When I went to DC in the place of, with Ted, 2 years ago, I spoke with the Army Corps of Engineers, and I reported out that there is all the infrastructure that is on the harbor is their responsibility. That's what they told me. And in fact, if we did any work on it, we would be liable because it's their responsibility. And I believe it includes the piers too. And that and I was really surprised because when I ran for council, there was also a measure on the ballot for Measure B-22. A tax, a property tax measure to repair the harbor infrastructure when it's not even our responsibility. And so I'm really glad that Director Munson is chasing this down. And I just think that really, like, we have lobbyists that can help with this, and I think it's really worth really not, I don't think we need to be super patient about this. We have been, and I think the squeaky wheel kind of, you know, we should try to, I don't know, do what we can to get this to happen and move forward quickly. I'm glad you're looking into that.
All right, thank you. Anybody else in the audience would like to speak? Come on up.
Hello. I was wondering maybe if those buildings could be brought back to their original location where the Army Corps of Engineers could then work on it from that point.
Sorry, which buildings?
Well, whatever buildings you're talking about that are in the way of the Army Corps working on them, or working on the abutment that's next to the Embarcadero.
Sorry. Oh, no, it's okay. So the buildings that we're referring to are the buildings along the Embarcadero. So they haven't really removed buildings that I know of. It's just that because the buildings are on top of the revetment, they have a difficult time repairing the parts underneath of it.
Yeah. So can those buildings be brought back to where they were so that the Army Corps of Engineers can take the responsibility for where they want to, right? Because they don't want the buildings out as far. So can they be brought back? Is that possible?
I think that's beyond the scope of, you know, what we can discuss here. I mean, that's not really part of what, you know, the presentation was about.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Appreciate that. Thanks. Anybody else in the audience? At AGP, is there anybody with their hands raised?
There are currently no raised hands in the queue.
That will bring it back to the advisory board. Any other questions, comments? Even file, so go ahead and move on to business item 7B, which is the license agreement for the non-brick and mortar, non-competing businesses in the Tidelands Trust area. Well, that's a mouthful. Hanson, you're gonna go?
All right, thank you. First off, I was going to give a little bit of background as far as what we talked about our last meeting and then edited version of it. Chris, when we last spoke, you said that maybe a format. Is there any kind of particular format that you want us to follow for this item?
No, and I apologize. I've just been completely buried the last day to be able to give any notes, but I did review your staff report, and I think that the updates are good. I think it would just be good to, as far as limiting the amount of mobile vendors, I didn't know if it was specific to all licenses or if it's just for mobile vendors. You had recommended that there was a limit of, I believe, five licenses that would be issued, and I just didn't know if that was specific to the mobile vendors, or is that for all licenses?
Definitely not for all licenses on Tidelands property. Okay. Okay. Yeah, this is just mobile vendors.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to go a little background. Our last meeting, we looked at a draft proposal. What I did is I took the current license application for sidewalk vending that the city uses, and then I added in a different scenario because of Tidelands properties. So if you're on one side of the Embarcadero, the east side, you have a regular, you are a property owner or a sublessee of that, but when you're on the Tidelands side, you have other further constraints that require a base rent monthly payment, as well as a percentage payment every month, and then due in completion at the end of July 30th, 31st. So what we were looking for is input from all the different stakeholders in Tidelands property, as well as community members, and then possible people who would want to be mobile vendors. And just took all of that information gathering and put it into the draft that we did last month. Then I brought it to the table to Harbor Advisory Board to discuss, and at that meeting there were a couple edits. So what I've done is changed those items in the application, and I will go into detail on that. And then the final thing that we would want to accomplish tonight is either approve it as is, and then it would go towards council to either look at it and approve it or edit it or just say thank you for the information. So on that note, the things that we discussed last time were, there was a lot of talk about placement. So the majority of us up here decided or voted that we did not want to see any vending, mobile vending on the rock. So if you look in the agenda, the map that is there, there are no stars at the Rock parking lot. And at Coleman Park, there is one in the west parking lot, one in the parking lot that is currently being utilized by the sauna vendor, mobile vendor, and then one more star at the base. Then as far as public comment and then other things as far as jurisdiction go, there used to be one in the Triangle parking lot near the Marina Maritime Museum, so that was removed per request. And then also another request that others felt was correct as well was to remove it out of the parking lot of Tidelands public dock, primarily because that's a very small parking lot, it's limited, and it is utilized by a lot of the liveaboards that already pay to have those spaces, so it would be impacted. We did retain the one that would be a mobile vendor that would be not motorized, I guess, but could be in the playground area, and then two stars in the Tidelands pier, well, no, just the docks and in that parking lot. It's a somewhat large parking lot. The other conversation that we had is how many. It seemed that we had a consensus that it would be a low number. And so on this, I said a maximum of 5. That was the other thing that was changed in here. And was there any other edits or concerns that you saw? Okay, so those are the main ingredients. There was one that was a joke that I put on the sand spit just to see if anybody was paying attention. I will say that there was, the Astero News did run, and we made front page, so that's pretty exciting. Talk about HAB. Maybe we can get more participation. Wrote in the article that there was one at the T pier, which there never was a star put at the T pier, so that's incorrect. And if it were there, it's not there because it wasn't there before. Now it's not there now. So I think that covers it. The changes as far as you guys go. Is there any questions or things that I did not edit that we were concerned about at last meeting?
I think you captured the spirit from the discussion that we had. We wanted to, you know, avoid the rock for obvious reasons. Also, we limited it to be kind of start small. You know, we don't want to issue 30 of them and then find out that it's untenable. Picked areas that have egress, you know, in and out. People can stop and, you know, buy this kind of stuff. Minimize the impact of the community, not by, you know, existing businesses per se. We're kind of, you know, off the beaten track a little bit, so got the spirit of it.
There was one other point that I'm sorry I forgot to mention, is that we did omit food trucks in total as far as outside vendors. I did put in there, and we should discuss that, is that I left the stipulation that if a brick and mortar master leaseholder or brick and mortar leaseholder that is on Tidelands property, that if they wanted to do food truck vending that they would require a city council approval. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, my question, Teresa, is the Harbor Department going to be monitoring this? And are they going to be accepting all the money and collecting all the fees? And how much staff time is involved in this?
Okay, so this is one of the possible economic development opportunities that the harbor does have. And yes, all of the, besides the business license that they would go through the city, they would need to do a business license through the harbor department. They would also pay the monthly fee to be there, which we gathered the information kind of based around what festivals are, and then we lowered it because it would be a contractual long-term agreement, which is, that's what usually happens when you agree to something for a longer period of time. You get a reduction in rent rather than a day-by-day fee. And then the percentage would also go to the Harbor Department. And then the other part that's really important to note is that California did pass a law that if a city doesn't have an ordinance based on vending, then anybody can go and move into those spaces. And if there's no rules, then the city can't do anything. So the city was quick to do their already in place sidewalk vending application, but this does an extra layer of protection and understanding and qualifications if you want to be on Tidelands.
I guess my question to the staff is, do you see much time involved here?
I believe in the, thank you, Chairman Dowdy, Board Member Dowdy. I think in the beginning it will take some time, but one thing that we had learned from Port San Luis, where it did become a time issue, is that if you have it as open all season where anybody could submit a proposal at any time, it does end up taking a lot of time. And so what we had switched to is having it open once a year and any proposals would come in over that month period. And then we would review them and then present the final package to the board.
Question for Member Hansen. I mean, this is an advisory board thing. So again, as you said at the beginning, this has to go to city council to get approved. City council or this legal, all that kind of stuff. So
once we come up with a full package, we would then take that to city council for approval.
And at this point, because any kind of city council approval or request, it's always nice to have a staff recommendation that's in favor of what the recommendation is. Is there anything that you as the director would want to comment on as far as concerns or maybe knowledge that we don't know that would be helpful in doing something that would actually be implemented?
Thank you, Board Member Hansen. A couple of things that I would suggest is just that the way I see it is this is one part of our license program. And so we would combine the recommendations here into the license program and then present both towards the board. The city council. And I guess my main concern is just as far as establishing a fixed rate, because normally with our lease sites, we negotiate those rates, and it's based off of, you know, the value, the impact, and whatnot. So if somebody was only planning on coming out here and using their license a few times a year, it wouldn't necessarily have the same fee, you know, in a perfect world, wouldn't have the same fee as somebody who's out here 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. And so that's where traditionally, or at a program such as Port San Luis, where the staff negotiates with the person who's presenting the proposal, and they come out with something that they think that would be agreeable with the city, and then finally the city adopts it. And so I think some of those, as far as very specific requirements, I think it's okay to leave it to the discretion of staff to weed out those things. I don't think it needs to be that specific, but I think that there's a lot of good recommendations within what you have proposed here.
Okay. As far as just a part of the reason why we came up with a monthly value is based on current leases and restrictions that the brick and mortar businesses have, such as they have to be open 6 days a week, they need to be open at least 8 hours a day, they can only close down for maintenance for 2 weeks a year, and then they have to have a really good reason if it's extended beyond that. This is really from one part is to help create funds for the Harbor Department, but also to create equality within all the different leaseholders. And as a mobile vendor, they would still should be accountable to the same level as the brick and mortars. So that's where that came from. And I do know that maybe we should look at it a little bit further as far as day, because if a vendor only wants to come like 2 to 4 days throughout the year, I know that right now Parks and Rec are doing day permits, and so that does go to the city. So perhaps we need to look at like event permits, which is segue to our next agenda item. So, okay, thank you.
Good point.
All right, I know we kind of got off a little bit here. We're going to open up the public comment, and then we got some more opportunities to discuss it.
I just wanted to say thank you to Charisse for such a wonderful job. It was a lot of work, and I'm not very good at administrative writing.
And idea guy.
She's an expert, so right. It was. She did a wonderful job. Thank you.
All right. With that, is there anybody in the audience that would care to speak to vendor, mobile license vendor? Go ahead.
Yes, Chairman and Council, thank you for everything. One question, does this have to go before the Coastal Commission, or is this something that we can initiate without any type of state regulations? I was just questioning that before you put everything together.
Thank you. That's why we have legal look at it. But I don't believe so. Anybody else in the audience care to speak to this one? AGP, does anybody have their hands up? AGP, does anybody have their hands raised?
Hi, Chair Byers. There are no raised hands in the queue.
Bring it back for discussion, although we're kind of halfway there. One of the things, I know when I looked at the pricing, it was it's a little eye-opening, but if you look at it, we want somebody to have a commitment. They sign up for a year, they pay, you know, whatever the fee is for a year, want them to be a serious vendor. You know, they are taking, you know, a slice of the wallet from the other vendors, so it shouldn't be cheap. Somebody that's selling a quality product doesn't diminish from, you know, selling dollar tchotchke stuff.
And if I may, Chairman Myers, I just want to say that is one of the main reasons to establish these ground rules, is to make sure that we're not directly competing or taking away, unfairly competing with brick and mortar businesses, because, in the rest of the city, not in Tylands, it's sort of fair game with food trucks, and we wanted to be able, when people asked if they are able to come on to Thailand's right now, the answer is no. And so if we were even going to consider that, we wanted to give the opportunity for there to be some feedback to figure out what kind of ground rules there would be. And so I think that was a good solution as far as bringing some equity, as far as having not only a percentage of gross, but a fee to help kind of even the playing field. And that, and then also with I believe non-food vendors having it towards the Embarcadero leaseholders. It was that correct in what you were saying as far as having it just exclusively to the Embarcadero businesses?
All leaseholders on the Tidelands property.
Correct. Okay. Perfect.
All right. Any other comments? I guess my next question for Director Munson and the ad hoc committee, do we just close this out and give it as is and then wait for it to come back at some point? Would it be on the agenda next month? My gut tells me that we're done at this point and then wait for it to come back.
Yeah, we can, if you guys are done with what you have presented, we can then take that and then combine it with our other recommendations for the license program and prepare it for either the HAB or just take it directly to City Council.
Go ahead, Sean.
All right, so are we taking more edits or at least questions now?
You can definitely more questions.
All right. I have a few points on this. First, we've had a number of exciting new businesses come into downtown Morro Bay. We have a Harbor Vitality Director, we have a Business Director, and Charisse is killing it with these new ideas here. So we need to get some excitement down there, and I really thank Charisse for putting this together. I have a couple, I think, minor suggestions as edits before this goes to council, or at least for consideration for HAB here. One is regarding Harbor versus planning jurisdiction on these applications coming in. And it seems like Harbor's a great place for the applications to start. But because our community development department has a pretty firm grasp on our general plan and our waterfront master plan, that at least there ought to be some administrative approval on things like vertical and lateral access, signage, and view corridors, if that's not already stipulated. I would also suggest, and people sort of alluded to this already, that perhaps we call this a trial period for the calendar year 2026 and reevaluate around this time, October 2026, for 2027 and beyond, and whether that happens at council or here, one of those probably ought to happen. And I do think that the public would be appreciative of calling this a trial period, not unlike the camping program, which, if it had not been called a trial period, might have caused more riots than it already did. So the planning approval, at least on administrative level, on each of these applications. I do think in terms of reporting, the draft in the agenda today says quarterly reporting. I would be really in favor of monthly reporting, just like hotels are required on TOT, just like STVRs are required on TOT, just like monthly rent at city-owned properties. Our waterfront accounting, in part because of the way the leases have been written historically, can be a bit of a quagmire for city accounting. So I would be in support of monthly reporting, quarterly at minimum, and for those reports from the lease, for the licenses to be a small line item on the status report from Harbor Director to HAB at the monthly meetings. I have another item here that may be food for thought, at least, and it sort of piggybacks on the monthly or quarterly required reporting, that if any waterfront master leaseholders or existing subtenants have a license, that the licensing payment and reporting doesn't get rolled into the waterfront master lease payment and reporting. It's a standalone item. Does that make sense? So any licensing, let's say a waterfront master leaseholder got one of these five licenses, that the reporting and remitting payment of the monthly revenue or rent or whatever you want to call it, that does it is a separate item than the waterfront master lease holder accounting. And then lastly, this sort of just got brought up, whether Chris, I think, wisely mentioned the value of flat rate pricing. Again, to simplify waterfront master lease accounting as much as possible, or Tidelands accounting as much as possible, if there's any way to err on the side of flat rate rather than fixed plus variable for the licensing, I would be in support of that. So those are the things I had written down. Thank you.
So I just have a question. The last thing that you just said as far as flat rate versus fixed plus percentage. But you want reporting.
Items. Yeah. Does that make sense? Those, in my mind, are two different different issues that I'm in support of more frequent reporting and more frequent remitting of payment, whether that's flat or not. But I, on as a separate issue, I would be more in support of flat rate licensing fees, if at all possible, rather than borrow from a system that is problematic with the percentages.
So as far as that goes, the reason that you would want to do reporting is so you knew that the percentage was accurate. So we wouldn't need to know what it, if it was a flat rate, you wouldn't need to know what their sales are or have them report on a monthly or a quarterly basis. So, so as far as that goes, right now with current leaseholders, they only have to submit annually what it is that their sales are. I felt being on the Embarcadero for 26 years, it really kind of put me in an awkward spot to be at the end of the year and be like, I just made all this money. And then you're like, wait, I owe it all to the thing. I would have preferred to have it be every 3 months. It keeps people honest and it matches sales tax. And when you do your sales tax, it has the same time frame. So the businesses will already be doing it. So it wouldn't be like an extra work item thing for the businesses, as well as it wouldn't be an extra work thing monthly for staff. And when rent is due, it's usually due on the first, and you need to wait at least 5 days. And even the government is lenient enough to wait 30 days before they ask you for, you know, what happened the month before. So that's a tough one. But yeah, right now we're on an annual, and moving to a quarterly is a move in what I think is in the right direction. Monthly might be a very taxing on staff, is my opinion. I do like the idea of community development approval. That is kind of the way that they already do it with the sidewalk vending license application. And they also, if it is happens to be a food service, they have to go through the health department as well. And so separate. So yeah, that's any other questions that maybe I can.
Yeah, I think that I appreciate that follow-up. If the licensing is a flat fee, monthly payment on the front end is with no reporting is certainly easier. If it's a percentage, the quarterly seems to be just fine.
You have one question, more of a tactical question. To me, those feel like implementation details at how the staff runs the program, not necessarily part of this document per se. So the question is, do we close this out now and let you guys run with it, or do we bring it back to, as an agenda item next month?
I think my preference is to say, you know, that you, that everybody agrees with the application process and we make a motion to accept it as is, with the understanding that Chris and Jeremiah and I meet in order to formulate all the other pieces of information. There was things that you mentioned that, and then the community development being involved in it, the actual, you know, this is an application and there's more things around it that maybe the three of us as a committee can meet to figure out what it is with the final document that we wanna send to the council.
I think that that's a good strategy that for the committee to reconvene, and then we'll combine it with the other part of the license agreement, and then we can bring it back to the full HAB.
Yeah, I want to make sure that it moves along this path. I'd like to have another opportunity to look at it, but I also don't want to hold it up in committee type of thing.
I think we've gotten a lot of good feedback, and I just did want to clarify that the they do still need to get a business license through community development too. So there is a sign up there, but we work closely with community development to make sure that everything's working well within their parameters as well.
Perfect. All right, so Lori, what's the next step? If we're, I want to do one more round for discussion, but after that, we just vote and say send it. Okay, perfect. Jeremiah?
Oh, I was going to say I'd like to make a motion that we accept.
Okay, perfect.
The Teresa's paper is read.
All right.
I second that motion.
Second that. All in favor? Aye, aye, aye. Any opposed?
Aye. Nay.
Nope.
Nope.
Carries 5-1 then. All right. With that, we'll close out business item 7B. We'll move on to the single day events. That's myself and Sean have that. Sean, if you want to speak to it, or I can.
Yeah. So this ad hoc committee is sort of adjacent to the one that we just talked about with licensing, just as an opportunity to look into vitality opportunities down on the waterfront, in particular with respect to one-off events, one-day events, and optimizing those. This sort of came about when someone wants to have an event down on the waterfront or anywhere in town really, and submits an application for whatever date to do whatever thing that they're going to do. And there's not always the most communication between interested parties, and so we might have two or three events taking place on the same day and no events taking place on the days around those. So anyway, we've been looking at different calendars that are out there and different systems that are currently in place. Today I spoke with Coral in the Parks and Rec department and just asked her. So Parks and Rec is more or less in charge of one-off event permitting, though any jurisdiction in town that is affected by that permit will get brought in as needed, like if events down by the waterfront. Someone in Harbor will be brought in. If there's public works involved, they'll be brought in. So certainly it depends on if a case-by-case basis, who needs to get brought in and why. So in terms of what I've worked on, that's about where I'm at. According to Parks and Rec, it doesn't seem like there's a huge need for lots of work and energy to be put into the permitting process per se. So I will have Cal chime in as well and see if he wants to add anything. But this seems, we're here on HAB that we're looking at vitality and we're looking at calendaring and we're looking at communication, that there seems to be an avenue for at least more publicity or transparency as to when events are happening and how those can be coordinated or facilitated either together or separately, intentionally. That's about what I'd say.
Thank you, Member Green. With the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department, I've actually got to live some of these things here just recently and trying to put some on. So it does feel like we're not making as much progress, but I think we're actually doing it real time. And so through swap meet, the friends at the Family Fun Festival, some cleanup stuff that we've doing, the movie night. We're getting a lot of firsthand experience about how to get that communications out, how to coordinate, make sure we're not stomping on each other's feet. Also working with the chamber. They have a lot of other nonprofits that they bring together once a quarter to discuss these very issues with volunteers and coordinating events. So it's going to be a little while to close this out, but I think we'll have a lot of firsthand knowledge on this. More we look at it.
And I want to add that there are many calendars out there, proprietary ones. Morro Bay's Visit Morro Bay has a calendar on their website that is a pretty good one that is fairly regularly updated. Chamber has another pretty successful calendar. As to getting these calendars to talk to each other, that's a tough one. That's an issue in any jurisdiction. probably not the city's job itself to manage that process. However, I did in my talk with Parks and Rec, if anyone wants to find out what is permitted for a given day, that you can certainly call Parks and Rec to see if there's anything on the calendar. And certainly if you're trying to rent a space in the city that is already booked, you'll find out when you submit that application. There may be an extra button or two we can click to make that calendar more public and more transparent. Though again, it doesn't necessarily feel like it's urgent or the most pressing matter.
All right. With that, any other comments? Go ahead, Gene.
Yeah, the movie night is a great idea. Recently, we've had several movies done at the Bay Theater. They've just been packed, you know. So I think that's a great big venue to we can tap into.
Yeah, it's almost an experiment. we've Charisse and mostly Charisse and I'm trying to help keep up with her, but yeah, we're pulling in a lot of different parties for this and. If it's successful, and we were fairly confident it will be, it'll be pretty cool. I'm super excited about it.
The recent surf club, they had to turn people away.
Yeah,
it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's yeah. I'm kind of giddy about it, to be honest.
The museum has used that three times now, and all three times we packed the house. So
yeah, this will be neat because it'll be outdoors. We just have to fight with the weather, the logistics of doing an outdoor event.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if it goes off, it'll be long, actually in right across from Santa's house. Water there. Knock on wood. Any other questions or comments about that? All right, we'll go ahead and close that out. Just receive and file. Future agenda items. We have a handful of things. I'm not sure if we want to start something up as we get into the last month or two of the year, but there's a couple cool things on there I think that we can pick up in 2026. If anybody has anything else they want to add or something they want to bring into the next meeting in November? All right.
There's no meeting in November. December will be the next meeting.
Oh.
I think it was supposed to be kind of like a standing item, but would Member Dowdy want to talk about the Waterfront Master Plan update?
I was late getting to the meeting this afternoon. I had a doctor's appointment, and it's like their yearly checkup thing there. And I said, oh, it's the same time. Can't you just adjust it a couple of hours? Oh, the next one is in February. So I was late. So, Charisse, maybe you can fill in what happened.
Okay.
You need some help?
Well, Chris was there. Perhaps it's better coming from
you. We do have a workshop coming up November 16th, I believe. Yeah, it's on a Tuesday night at 6 p.m. And so that will be the one where public can come out, and it should be a good event where people can provide their public input.
And I'll just add on top of that we looked at an updated version of the boundary of the Waterfront Master Plan. So there is a map online for people to look at that includes the concrete facility, the waterfront, the wastewater treatment, the Vistra property. It even covers the little bluff area of where the stairs used to be, right across the way from where we are right now, the Vets Hall. And then it also includes the Market Plaza area because that's city-owned, and it's a point of interest to connect the uptown area and the Embarcadero. So we approved the new range boundary area for the Waterfront Master Plan.
Yeah, I did throw in my 2 cents worth at the meeting there. I think the boundaries ought to include the water and the waterfront. It's like looking at something with both eyes and then you're covering it up and you're only seeing half of it. The water itself is the most dramatic, dynamic part of our waterfront, and I think it needs to be included.
Thank you. Is there anything else? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, Cherise, how far north did the Tidelands area go?
It mirrors the same as the 1995 region. So it goes towards a little past where the statue is at the rock. It really just does the inside part of the harbor.
Okay. It does not extend down Coleman Drive?
Yeah. No, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't go to like where the boatyard for the Morro Bay Harbor Department is or A Beach or any of that. It's just a sliver along the water's edge.
Okay, thank you.
All right, with that, we'll try to close out the future agenda items. Is there anything?
Chairman Myers, can I just add one?
Absolutely.
So just mentioned at the last city council meeting, there was quite a concern over how the Tidelands, the launch ramp parking was going to be rolled out. We're looking at initiating that at the beginning of next year. And so I had said that we would bring that at the next, not this meeting, but the next HAB meeting to discuss, concessions for liveaboards, fishermen who are down there, and our annual passes, because we're looking at, it's been on the books for a while, but charging for automobiles $5 a day. And so we were just going to go through some different options that we're looking at for that initial rollout.
So for the December meeting,
this would be for the December, yes.
Business item on there about the parking.
Yes.
Associated staff report with it.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I think that's it. Any other items that people would want to have on the agenda for now December? All right, so whatever time it is, 45, meeting adjourned.